This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
It's Fun Friday. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and it is that time again where Matt unfreezes his smile, has it stress tested, and tries to reanimate those dormant facial muscles. Yes, it's time to be happy as we return to an MSP regular feature that celebrates science and the innovations and breakthroughs that demonstrate our humanity isn't rotting away to nothing. Matt, that wasn't the most uplifting intro. Rotting away to nothing?
Yeah, it's part of my new tactic where I get you to say all the negative stuff.
Why would you do that?
No, Jeff, the question is, why would you do that? I'm not the one being negative here.
All right, so are you going to tell the listeners where you've been for the past few weeks?
Well, I could lie and say that I was visiting the future, but in truth, a family member was a little bit unwell, but is now on the mend, thankfully.
All right, thankfully. Now, while we're on the subject of illness, the first thing I want to talk about is baldness.
Look, baldness is not an illness. It's not an affliction. It's actually nature's aerodynamic remodeling. Do you see how these... You know how mean these comments make you look.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Okay. In a post-truth world, the way you're drawn is actually the way that you are. But you are right. Baldness is, yeah, a very important thing to start with.
All right. Does being bald make you unhappy?
Just to point out to listeners that this isn't another mean question from Jeff. I did ask him to ask me this. And no, it doesn't really bother me. I mean, I wish I had a nicer shaped head so that I could shave it completely bald without looking like an inmate or somebody who's terminally ill. But, you know, I've never spent ridiculous amounts on hair thickeners or I've gone for these, you know, expensive regrowth treatments.
Yeah, no, you spent the monies on burgers instead.
And I should point out that I didn't ask Jeff to ask that question. No, losing your hair is a big deal for a lot of guys, and the treatments that we currently have are quite, you know, patchy, to say the least. Transplant surgery is painful. It's very expensive, too.
Oh, you've checked the price.
For a friend.
Yeah.
And, you know, the various drugs available to reverse or slow male pattern baldness are either a bit hit and miss in terms of effectiveness, or they come with some unpleasant side effects like reduced sex drive. Mm-hmm. You know, and what's the point of that? You look like a stallion, but you behave like a gelding.
All of which is a very long way of saying someone has found a cure.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of those items I really like talking about on MSP because it's not necessarily about new knowledge. It's about making theoretical knowledge useful and practical. So we've known for quite a while that stimulating the scalp with electrodes is a good way to regenerate hair growth.
Why?
Because the electric shocks make all your hair stand on end, even in the follicles that seem to be dead.
That isn't true, is it?
No, but I wanted everyone to have that mental image of Albert Einstein having his eureka moment, you know, with his hair standing on end.
Yeah.
A team of researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, helmed by Zudong Wang, has come up with a scalp-stimulating set of patches, a series of which can be mounted onto a simple baseball cap. And the main reason the electric route has proved impractical in the past is because users would have to be connected to machines delivering the current to their scalp for hours every day over an extended period.
Okay, but what makes this really clever?
Well, I'm glad that you spotted that there has to be something clever. It's because it's wireless. It actually uses kinetic energy to create the current in the patch.
A triboelectric effect?
Yeah, the patch contains layers of material that actually move as the body moves. So the materials are differently charged so that when they come into contact with each other, a small pulse is generated.
Mm.
So every time you move, you're switching the circuit on and off. You're connecting and disconnecting the circuit and generating power.
Has it been effective?
Well, I learned one disappointing fact. So bald mice are a good model for hair loss and regeneration. Now, I don't want to be sexist, but I suspect that a good chunk of our female listeners will not be surprised by this confluence of mice and men. And the patches worked surprisingly well on the bald mice, so much so that Wang built a prototype which he took the highly ethical step to try on his own father. Wang is quoted by The New Scientist as saying that the patch helped his father to grow a lot of new hair, over the 1 month that it was tested.
Does it hurt?
Well, no, it's a very gentle current, and it needs to be because you actually wear it during the day while your body is moving. There won't be enough movement while you're sleeping to create the pulses. So the next step is for the cap to go into clinical trials. So who knows? In a few years' time, maybe I'll look more like, I don't know, Harry Styles than Harry Shearer.
All right. So shall we stick with shocking discoveries?
Yeah. Now, one of the things we're told by fossil fuel enthusiasts is how poor renewable energy is. What do you do with a wind farm when there's no wind or solar panels at night or wave harnessing when the sea is calm, which is kind of nonsense because there are always currents to make use of. You know, the sea is never still. It just looks that way to us sometimes because we're on the wrong side of it.
So you're closing the renewables loop now.
Well, not me. I mean, I wish I had that kind of ability. But that's why scientists and researchers are our generation's superheroes. You know, this is another one of those very clever electric effects.
The triboelectric effect?
A good try, but you're not getting away with saying the same thing over and over again.
Why not? What would this show be without endless repetition?
Well, you see, I'm the sunny, funny one this week, and Jeff gets to be the curmudgeon. Mm. I really think this is the way to go. Yeah, exactly. He's grumbling already. But no, this time it's the thermoelectric effect.
Which exploits differences in temperature and then converts them into electricity?
Bingo, or should I say fire for our younger listeners.
Don't ever say that again. Be happy with an old and bald man because that, I think, kind of suits you.
Okay. Thermoelectric power generation is not something that's new either, but typically it's been used on large volume sites using waste heat from, say, factories to be turned into electricity. Now, a team under Aswath Raman at the University of California, Los Angeles, has gone a different way with the same principle. They've come up with a way to capitalize on the difference between the temperature of the ground and the temperature of the sky at night.
Radioactive sky cooling?
You are on fire today. Hashtag 100%.
Wow.
And yes, I know, I'm not supposed to say any of that. Radiative sky cooling describes the process where objects that absorb the sun's rays during the day radiate that heat back to the sky at night. So as a result, depending on how quickly they shed that heat, the objects can become colder than the ambient air temperature around them. For example, when you sit on the ground on a balmy summer's evening, which is every evening in Malaysia, you can often feel a chill because although the air is warm, the ground you're sitting on is actually shedding heat up to the sky.
So how do we get from your cold butt to electricity?
Well, the team at UCLA created a box containing two pieces. So there's a black disc designed to lose its heat to the sky and a second piece, an aluminium block, designed to absorb heat from the night air. A standard thermoelectric generator was used to convert those temperature differences into electricity.
Please stop saying electricity.
Okay, fine. You really don't like anything I'm saying today. Tests they carried out in California on relatively cold nights, around 1 degree Celsius, a temperature that's almost torturously unimaginable to most Malaysians, produced enough power to run an LED light. In warmer climates, and by scaling the procedure up, a simple small generator could recharge your phone or even power the lights in your home.
That's not jaw-dropping levels of power.
No, but you're talking about what's actually a very cheap system. So the UCLA team built their prototype for not millions of dollars, not thousands of dollars, but for $30. That is incredibly cheap, a power generator for $30. And the team is confident that because of the low temperature generated, systems like this could work for up to 20 years because they're not being worn out by the heat being generated. So it'd be a great backup for most people, or even a primary source for remote locations and developing economies where there's limited access to electric power at night without expensive diesel generators. And I'll just add that one more thing.
Yeah.
It's been done at UCLA. And of course, California has had loads of power cuts because of the wildfires. So this is even a technology that could be of value to people in California.
All right. One more quick story before the break.
Well, sticking with the environment, slightly less positive this one. Some of you may have seen a story on various news sites a few weeks back about tea bags. Now, unsurprisingly, perhaps, I am a tea drinker. And most of us tend to think that our tea bags are made out of paper. But a lot of the brands, especially the premium brands, have been introducing those silky-feeling tea bags. And they achieve that by using plastic. So a study at McGill University in Quebec found that these tea bags shed millions and millions of microplastic fibers into your tea. Now, I'm using the word shed an awful lot this week. I think it's because my cat, King Jafar, has been shedding his fur all over me. But yeah, this is shedding billions of microplastic particles into your tea. And that's many times higher than in most food and drink.
Is it harmful?
Well, we don't actually know yet. So far, there's no evidence to suggest it is. But research into microplastics and their toxicity and effect on the environment is, of course, very new. It's been very big this year. Mm. We do know that they're finding their way into the water supply and into the seas, and there really isn't any reason to use them. You know, plenty of brands do use paper tea bags rather than single-use plastics, and those premium brands using them do usually have, you know, loose tea alternatives as well. So you don't have to use plastic tea bags. Mm.
Any more wise tea-related words?
Well, I recently tried to buy unbleached empty paper tea bags from one of those retail aggregator sites. I won't name which one. Mm-hmm. The description claimed they were premium Japanese products and they were made from 100% natural fibers. Hashtag again, 100%. When I received them, I thought they felt weirdly silky. So I did a Google Translate with my camera onto the package. And it turned out to be 100% plastic. I mean, that's what it said in Japanese, 100% plastic. I mean, I guess you can make a case for petroleum being natural, but I think that's probably pushing the term organic a bit beyond any kind of sensible limit. But I think it was a genuine error by the seller, who immediately offered to refund me and apologized for the discrepancy and said they would change the listing. But yeah, when you're buying stuff with writing on it that you can't read, do run it through Google. Don't leave things to chance.
All right. When we come back, I get to say timber. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
Backing feminist movements. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to Tech Talk, made possible by TM1.
And we're back. It is MSP and it's Fun Friday. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Before the break, Matt left us with a lecture on tea bags. And now, as promised, I get to say timber.
You look exactly like a lumberjack. There's people crowded outside the studio marveling at your, well, I don't know what they're marveling at.
Thank you, thank you.
One of our most popular episodes this year was the one that we did on superwoods, the new generation of sustainable timber products that could replace our dependence on concrete as the material that we build our towns and cities from. We're increasingly seeing these incredible avant-garde metal and glass buildings from celebrity architects, shapes that twist, taper, bow in the middle. Up until now, it's been very difficult to achieve the same results with materials like wood.
Mm, let me guess. Science has found an answer.
It has. You know, when we did this superwoods episode, we talked about the ways that different types of wood with different properties could be glued together to create these incredibly strong and flexible sheets. Now, Marcus Ruhrberg and a team at the Swiss Federal Laboratories for Materials Science and Technology have found a way to essentially create wooden building materials with the requisite curve designed into them. And it all has to do with moisture.
I know you're expecting me to say moisture with a surprise tone in my voice.
Well, let's just pretend you've done that. The Swiss team tested planks of varying thickness of European beech and Norwegian spruce. One is a softwood, the other is a hardwood. Now, depending on how the woods are combined and glued together as plywood sheets, as the timber dries, they actually form the pre-programmed curve. Essentially, by placing the sheets perpendicular to each other, as the water content drops, one sheet shrinks while the other remains the same shape, and that causes the wood to bend.
And this is important because?
Well, flexibility is key to something's popularity as a building material. Bending and shaping wood on site requires a lot of energy-intensive equipment. Here, the sheets can be built to design and shipped out. In fact, if I've understood this correctly, they can actually be shipped out flat, and then they'll start to bend once you get them on site. And those dimensions can basically be programmed into the manufacture of the material, which takes superwood another step closer to being able to challenge the flexibility and ease of use of materials like concrete.
All right. And I do believe we have another wood-based story.
Well, we do. Paper anyway, which, as most people know, generally starts off as wood, unless you're one of those nerds making your own papyrus from reeds, because that's how I spend my weekends when I'm not making my eyebrows fleek. We talk a lot on this show about encryption and secrecy and privacy, and we've heard rumors recently that new breakthroughs in quantum computing could render even the most complicated forms of computer encryption almost instantly crackable.
Why aren't we covering that story?
Because this is the Good Times show, so there's plenty of shows where we can discuss, you know, ending up in a wood chipper and feeding the cattle of super-rich, enhanced humans. Yun Ma at China's Nanjing University has developed a novel take on that old childhood favorite, invisible ink. Mm. He found a way to use a standard home printer filled with water rather than ink to print secret messages. And it involves using a special paper rather than a funny ink. When the water is sprayed from the printer onto the paper, it makes that area of the paper less fluorescent. So the paper will glow green under an ultraviolet light using UVC.
And is UVC something that's common?
Well, I mean, it's from the sun, so yes. But pure UVC is harmful to humans. So the team is working on a version that is visible under near-infrared light instead.
And what would this be used for?
Well, military applications, of course. School kids, naturally. Companies who want to record secrets that they have easy access to. And I imagine some international politicians are keeping an eye on this because these secrets can also be very easily erased. Blow air from a hairdryer on the paper for around 30 seconds and the special compound melts, reforming its original shape and erasing the contents in the process. So it just becomes a plain piece of paper all over again. The paper can then be reused around 30 times, something that Ma's team is hoping to increase.
You said something about using me as a sounding board for the next item.
Well, in a sense, yes. I want to bounce some sound waves off you. This is all about neural repurposing. So a recent study of a group of blind people has shown them adapt to echolocation, you know, making clicks to bounce sound off objects. And the incredible thing is that it uses the part of the brain that we normally use for visual processing, which is something that they've lost. So when they were placed in an MRI by the researchers, the primary visual cortex, the part of the brain that we use to map physical locations, was activated in a similar way to sighted people for most of, or rather in the most expert echolocators.
So they are essentially using other human technologies to map their environment.
Well, it's actually really exciting when you think about it. You know, we talk about neuroplasticity, we talk about neural reshaping. I have to learn how to pronounce neuroplasticity. and these often seem like very remote scientific terms that we struggle to visualize. But then you have a group of people using sound to create maps of the world around them, a different technology, but still being used to create images. The picture it draws for you, you know, it's very easy to understand, and it shows you just how remarkable that we, the human machine, actually is.
All right, so are you ready to take us to the final frontier?
I'm not really sure, but I know that Elon Musk is. His Starship, the rocket he plans to use to take people to the moon and Mars, will begin test flights in a couple of months.
This is his BFR.
Yes. The big Falcon rocket that he keeps changing the name of. I'm lobbying for him to change it to the King Jaff rocket because I want to hear that King Jafar has landed on Mars.
And King Jafar is Matt's cat, by the way.
And feline overlord. You may remember that a Japanese billionaire paid for 8 artists to take one of those inaugural flights in 2020 around the moon. Now, a lot is resting on these test flights. Obviously, it has to be reliable. It has to be safe, especially as it will be carrying the literal building blocks of those new moon and Mars colonies. So it has to be reusable. So I am actually really excited to see what happens.
Do you want Mars to get to Mars?
Well, listeners to this show and to geeks will know how genuinely excited that both you and I get around space travel and discoveries. In fact, as I was typing these notes, I got a notification saying that China has a new spacecraft. Mm. And yes, you know, the unnamed craft may take Taikonauts to the moon's surface next year, but back to Musk and Mars, I think we both have some concerns when it comes to the motivation about some of this private space travel. Ultimately, I don't think that those things should belong to one person or to one company or to one country. I think it's a bit more important than that, or a lot more important than that. But there is nothing that would give me more pleasure than to see that rocket reaching Mars safely with its passengers aboard, because, you know, it is insane. It's ultimately insane. And like the echolocation story just before, it shows what people can do when they try.
All right. And I know you love to leave us with food on a Friday. So what delights you have in store for us today?
I'm not sure if this is good news or not, but an independent review of existing studies on the link between red meat and heart disease and other health conditions has concluded that there's no real evidence to suggest that there is a causal link. Mm. We've accepted the truism for the past couple of decades that we should cut down on our red meat consumption. But the Cochrane Centers in Spain and Poland, who specialize in reviewing bodies of medical research, found that a lot of the research didn't meet the benchmark of proof, and that the studies that did meet the benchmark came in as not really sure type conclusions.
So does that mean that red meat is safe to eat in any quantities?
Well, nothing is safe to eat in any quantities. I mean, I found out yesterday that chocolate can poison you. It contains a toxin called theobromine that can cause heart attacks and kidney failure. Fortunately, you'd have to eat around 40 bars of chocolate in a sitting. And if you're doing that, you probably have worse problems than chocolate poisoning. But the news about the meat rather than the chocolate has caused explosions across the scientific and health communities. It's even caused comments from environmentalists who fear it will spur demand for beef and create even more deforestation and wildfires. From the comments I've seen, I think what we'll probably see in the medical community in general is less reliance on observable research and its data, because it's the test group studies that seem to have fared the worst, the most poorly. So we may see more laboratory-based science based on experiments and studies that can actually be replicated.
So it's not a green light for burgers then?
Well, unless you're following one of those extreme diet influencers who's eaten nothing but brick dust and matcha powder for the last 3 weeks, you know, for most of us, it's just about moderation, and it always has been. For me, cutting down on red meat and meat in general is less about health than it is about reducing the environmental impact of that part of the food industry. I do that as a choice, and because I genuinely like vegetables. And with that, I think my scientific work for the day is done.
And there we go. We welcome Matt with the bang, celebrating science, the baldness fix, echolocation, invisible ink, and how could we forget tea bags? We'll be right back with Geeks Walks after this, BFM 89.9.
Tech Talk, made possible by TM1. To learn more, visit tm1.com.my.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.